Why is Halloween the third most popular holiday in America? Is it just a way to vent steam, or do we need this October ritual to get ready for the long winter? Hello, I'm Kathleen McCoy. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. We'll spend our hour together talking about ghosts and goblins, witches and werewolves, and Michael Jackson lookalikes. If you haven't figured out what you'll be this Halloween, stay tuned for some great ideas. If you already know, call and tell us. Another question, is your neighborhood crawling with kids on Halloween? And where will you get your goblin on? We'll be right back to explore our dark side with an anthropologist, a woman who puts people into their fantasy costumes, and a wildlife biologist with her own cautionary tale. But first, here's news from National Public Radio.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. A big day on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, driven by some fairly upbeat earnings, closed above 10,000 for the first time in more than a year. Number two investment bank J.P. Morgan Chase reported it earned $3.6 billion for its latest quarter. Computer chip maker Intel also weighed in with optimistic earnings while posting quarterly numbers that beat analysts' estimates. Excluding the cash for clunkers hangover, retail sales in the U.S. were higher last month. That is according to the Commerce Department. That's better than analysts had hoped for and encouraging news for an economic recovery. More from NPR's Frank Langfitt.
After the extraordinary government incentives in August, car sales plummeted last month, but sales in many other sectors picked up. That includes department stores, grocery stores, furniture stores, and restaurants. Excluding autos, total retail sales actually rose by 0.5%. Analysts are watching retail sales very closely. Consumer spending drives 70% of the nation's economic activity, so a sustainable recovery hinges on people beginning to spend more. But that's easier said than done. Most analysts think the economy is growing again, but employers continue to lay off workers. More unemployed means fewer people able to spend and continued anxiety in the worst job market in decades. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has wrapped up a five-day European tour in Russia with stops in Tatarstan and Moscow. Jessica Gallagher has details from Moscow.
Clinton addressed Russian university students, telling them that Russia can't grow and prosper as a country unless certain core freedoms are present, such as the ability to participate in the political process. Many analysts say Clinton's comments to students are aimed at easing Russian liberal fears that Washington won't hold Moscow accountable for rolling back democracy in exchange for cooperation on Iran and Afghanistan. Clinton also visited the ethnically and religiously diverse city of Kazan. Clinton says she chose to visit the city because it's where Muslims and Orthodox Christians live peacefully together. For NPR News, I'm Jessica Gallagher in Moscow.
The Special Inspector General with the government's Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, told members of a House committee today the government dropped the ball in terms of reining in bonuses at insurance giant American International Group. Neil Barofsky told lawmakers Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is ultimately responsible for allowing the bonuses, even as the government was committing tens of billions of dollars to bail out AIG.
Secretary Geithner did not find out, did not learn of these bonus payments until just days before they were made. But this, too, is a failure. It was a failure of communications, and it was a failure of management.
Geithner became head of the Treasury in January. He says he did not learn about the bonuses to AIG employees until March. On Wall Street today, the Dow gained 144 points, closing at 10,015. The Nasdaq was up 32 points today. This is NPR. According to intelligence officials, the terrorist operative who contacted the Afghan immigrant accused of plotting a terror attack in New York was the head of Afghanistan's al-Qaeda operations. U.S. officials close to the investigation are being quoted as saying they believe Mustafa Abu al-Yazid contacted the terror suspect through an intermediary. Currently being held in connection with the alleged terror plot is 24-year-old Najibullah Zazi. Zazi has pleaded not guilty to conspiring to use weapons of mass destruction to carry out an attack on targets in New York. The latest evaluation of U.S. students' math skills will not impress many people, but as NPR's Claudio Sanchez reports, there is some good news.
Since 1990, there's been a 20-point gain in 8th-grade math scores and a 27-point gain in 4th-grade scores. That means kids today overall are much more skilled in key areas such as number operations, measurement, geometry, statistics, and algebra. And that's impressive because more and more school children today are low-income and don't speak English at home. Although black students still lag behind all other racial ethnic groups in both 4th and 8th grade, their average math scores have gone up 34 points since 1990. outpacing even the highest-achieving group, Asians and Pacific Islanders. Family income, meanwhile, is still a huge predictor of how kids do in math, but in some states, low-income kids in rural and inner-city schools are doing better than they did 19 years ago. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
With many Americans in financial difficulty, state regulators are cracking down on aggressive debt collection operations. Half a dozen states have put in place tougher restrictions. The move comes as lawmakers focus on firms that buy bad debt from credit card companies and other lenders for pennies on the dollar, then seek to collect more than they paid. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at Hewlett.org.
We'll come back to Hometown Alaska, where we're talking about our darker sides and Halloween. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Before we get started, I want to invite you to join our conversation. You can send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. Or if you're in Anchorage, you can call 550-8433. And if you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Also, this program is rebroadcast tonight at 10 without new phone calls or emails, so you can listen again then. So let's get to our guests. We've got three in the studio with me today. Carrie Feldman is an urban anthropologist from UAA. Welcome, Carrie.
Well, it's good to be here, Kathleen.
And Starla Heim has been putting folks in costumes for 18 years as the owner of Dooley's Tuxedos and Costumes. Welcome, Starla.
Thank you.
And finally, Jesse Coltrane chases wild things all around the Anchorage Bowl as a fish and game biologist. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks, Kathleen.
So thank you all for taking the time to come. I know you all have really busy lives, as I noticed when I was trying to reach you. I'm glad you're here today, and I think we can give people something interesting about Halloween. I did a little research getting ready for the show, and what really got me about this, as I said in the startup, it's the third most popular holiday in the United States, second only to Christmas and Super Bowl Sunday. Figure that out. So what got me is that it's such an ancient thing, and it goes way back 2,000 years to the Celts and a festival that they had that is pronounced Samhain, which sort of sounds like summer's end. But anyway, it was sort of the harvest time for them, and there was a whole lot going on. They were killing animals so they'd have food through the winter. They were having bonfires to throw the bones in, all kinds of things like that. So what can you tell us about it, Carrie, from way back, from your anthropological viewpoint?
Well, thank you, and it's good to be here. We are busy at 4 o'clock. I got to zip back for a lecture on archival research, but
Not on Halloween, I
guess. Your phone call, and it's good to be at KSKA because they do so much for the community, so it's really good to be here. In anthropology, we look at the social meaning of things and the function, and why something begins is not necessarily why it continues. So having said that, also I teach anthropology of religion, and within there we have things that deal with rituals, and this thing is kind of like a ritual. It's like a secular ritual, but it did begin as a religious ritual event. In other words, a prescribed social event that people would engage in that expresses their cosmology and their beliefs about the world. And the Celts were, pastoralists, and they had cows, and they were farmers, and this was the end of their season. And they had four seasons like we did. So it was kind of a change over from one year to the next. And time is always a tricky thing for people because we invented it. And when you go from old to new, I mean, you count, but you kind of make it special. And in terms of religion, they believed in spirits and there were ghosts. And these folks wandered around during the year. But especially tonight, this is like a soul's day. Especially tonight they were around. So those animals you're talking about that they were slaughtering, getting ready for the winter, they had to offer them also for the dead to for them, and put skeletons in the window to keep these dead people away, because death is always a complex thing for humans. We know it's part of life, but it's scary.
It's kind of scary.
So it was a Celtic thing, and over time it came to the United States, and we can see what else we want to go into there about how it got here and stuff.
Some of the things that I found interesting, I know bonfires are big, but I didn't know it was about throwing animal bones into the fire. I also read that, people would put out all their fires around the village, and then they would go light their fire again from the bonfire because that was a way that they felt united as a community. Mm-hmm. They were sort of all protected together with mm-hmm. this new fire, which is kind of an interesting idea. I read that people wore masks as a way to placate the dead.
Placate them and maybe pass invisible so that the dead would just think they were another weird soul. Christianity came there in the 6th century, and then so they tried to take this non-Christian event and give it a holy thing. And that's what interests – why it comes into anthropology of religion. It's Halloween. It's hallow. It's something sacred here, and yet – these little kids running around and, me as a kid being a cowboy or whatever. It's no longer sacred. But they wanted, so often, like with Christmas, to replace this secular, pagan, quote-unquote, holiday feast celebration with something Christian. And so they created All Saints Day on November 1st. So this was the eve of All Saints Day. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work. So then they created All Souls Day on November 2nd so they wouldn't forget about these souls. But you can't get the Irish to forget about their deceased that easily.
No. Well, I think it's interesting that when we talked beforehand, you said something about it being sanctioned rebellion. And I would like you to talk a little bit about that because it sort of sounds like it's predetermined that we have to let some steam off. But then if we get to do that, we'll just go back and we'll put the harness back on and we'll be good. So, what do you think about that?
Well, that's one of the that's a functionalist approach in anthropology. When we look at it, for the Celts and the Druids that celebrated these things, this was not a ritual of rebellion. This was celebrating their cosmology. But why did it continue over here? And why do people that really don't believe in witches? If you really believed in a witch, you never let your child dress like one. And that is why for some Christian groups, this is a problem, because some of Christian groups do believe in witches. But a lot of folks don't. And so why do we allow kids to do something that you're not allowed to do, like go next door and say, give me something?
Yeah, or demand candy.
I'm going to do a trick. I'm going to put junk on your windows, or I'm going to tip your outhouse over or something. Many, many cultures, most maybe, have a ritualized approval for going against your social norms, which, and the purpose of that is to let off steam. So, and it's a form of social control, which it sounds, contradictory, but by letting off that steam, you're acknowledging, I really accept that I shouldn't be doing this. I can only do it now. I can only ask for candy now. When I was a kid, I was not allowed to trick-or-treat.
Ever?
No, never. My mother was of German Catholic background. My father was German non-Catholic background. But she said it's really beneath us to ask for candy. But we did dress in costumes and had a great time. But when kids would come to our door, we'd invite them in. And we'd say, come on in, you have to tell us. You have to show us a trick. And so by trick, we meant something, clever. What I would do is I snuck out on top. We had this roof when we moved to Montana from Oregon, to Oregon from Montana. I got on this, climbed up in this roof, and I was 10 years old, and these little kids were out there trick-or-treating, and I threw popcorn at them and went like a ghost and scared them. And so we would terrify the trick-or-treaters.
That was your
ritual of rebellion.
Well, I looked up, where does all this mischief making come from? And it sounds like you were making your own mischief, whether or not you were having Halloween. But the Celts believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to the earth on October 31st, and they caused lots of trouble, and mm-hmm. they damaged crops. And so that's where the sort of mischievous mm-hmm. nature comes in. So, and also the wearing of costumes. We talked about masks. People wore masks so that maybe the ghosts would, bypass them. But also they wore animal garb, which mm-hmm. kind of, is interesting. They were maybe imitating or honoring some of the animals that they were slaughtering. Mm-hmm. So it's just amazing, how old it is.
And I don't get the impression that it was celebrated widely in America, that it developed slowly. I think on the East Coast, wherever there were people of a strong Protestant faith, they didn't like this thing. And so in Maryland, which was Catholic, and in the South, there was more of this celebration of Halloween. But then after that potato famine, we had more Irish come over, and it took off again sort of in the late 1800s. And then in the 1900s, it sort of spread and has now become... But why did it last? Commercialism, which I think Starla can tell us about. I mean, and it's moved to the Saudi Arabia has things in which times and parts where they will celebrate Halloween. It's just like Christmas is now in Japan. It's commercialized, even though they don't believe in
all boundaries.
In Christ.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it must speak to us in some way if adults and children get the same. Maybe adults get more out of it than the kids do, actually.
Adults get to be kidsy. I mean, I like to tell my students that we get taller. I don't know if we ever grow up. But it's really fun to... also play someone that you're not for a while. I mean, it gets pretty tedious being yourself, and you get a chance to live out a fantasy just for a little while and have fun and just get away from your normal self.
Well, Starla, I wonder, you've been working with folks in your store, and by the way, we got an email from someone who said they found a funky hat at a local bookstore, and it was the best witch hat they've ever found. So people, I wondered if we were ahead of the Halloween curve or not, but it sounds like we're probably right in it, especially based on what you're seeing. Tell us about your shop and what's going on there.
Well, it's definitely a busy time right now, and we actually start getting busy around end of August, beginning of September, and not with the major crowds that come in. But yeah, people like to prepare. They like to prepare for Halloween. They do.
They plan ahead.
It's a big deal up here, and I wasn't aware that it was the third largest holiday, so I'm very intrigued by that little bit of trivia there. But yeah, this town, and I can only research Alaska and Anchorage because that's where I am, and we like to dress up in this town, not just on Halloween, but year-round.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very intrigued by the history that you're talking about as well. But yeah, people are dressing up. They're dressing up early. They're dressing up getting ready for the Saturday Halloween this year. They're out there. They're getting ready.
Well, we talked about the commercialization of it, but the early predictions I read in September were that this was going to be a smaller Halloween and blah, blah, blah. And there's something called the National Federation of Retailers that does a lot of research on this and starts to sort of predict, how Christmas is going to go, how Halloween is going to go. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that one of the mitigating factors is that it's a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And so people may be partying at home. Maybe there's less stuff going out, but they're still getting their costumes and they're still planning on being their fantastic whatever they're going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's and I'm starting to see it's probably going to be just as big, if not bigger.
Yeah.
And it's because people are having home parties. Because people that don't normally even dress up on Halloween, people that don't normally even celebrate Halloween, hey, it's a Saturday this year. Let's just have a party and invite all our friends. There's a lot going on with the house parties this year.
Well, we'd like to hear from folks out there if they know what they're going to be. You can email us at hometownalaska@ksk.org or you can call 550-8433. And if you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. One of the things I heard is that Halloween is huge in Juneau. I don't know whether you get orders from Juneau or not.
Very few.
But I found a blog down there that was listing, and I'll try to find it in my notes here later, where they're listing the five best costumes in Juneau, of all places. I wanted to share with you that the Huffington Post has been right on their game with this, and they started listing, they did something like the 15 best Halloween costumes, and I thought some of them were pretty good. Bernie Madoff in a prison outfit with a bullseye on his back. Another one was, this is a bit on the edge, the Octomom holding eight babies, which is just kind of sad. Swine flu. I saw these pig noses on your website.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a pig nose.
Sold a lot of those.
You carry a box of tissues, and you're in scrubs, and you're the swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's one, Susan Boyle, the woman who, almost won American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need for that is a messy brown wig and fake eyebrows and a gold evening gown and a microphone. And you can be Susan Boyle. I don't know if you can sing like she can sing. I've always been intrigued by the way people like to get political. And the bailout was one that was registered on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And you would wear a very fancy suit and carry a bucket to collect money.
So make a little statement there. Another one was public option. You know, the healthcare reform, you could go as the public option. And they recommend a zombie doctor outfit and a noose around your neck and dead makeup. So obviously that's not too optimistic about that.
I think that's kind of stretchy.
So, and let's see, there's the same organization, the National Federation of Retailers, puts out a list of, you know, for adults, what's the best cost, you know, what do people want to be? And mm-hmm. over and over again, it's witches for adults, which kind of surprised me, or vampires. Mm-hmm. But for kids, it's fantasy, it's princesses mm-hmm. And pirates. Mm-hmm. Pirates for adults, too, right?
Yeah, pirates definitely for adults ever since the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise came out. It's been huge. And it's not just a huge Halloween theme. That's a huge year-round theme for theme parties. And
you mean people don't even have to have Halloween to go into this?
Oh, no. There's parties in this town every weekend as far as theme parties. And there's a lot of corporations that will do business meetings based on themes. They will actually do presentations based on themes. And I mean, the pirate is huge, huge theme right now.
You know, I just thought of something about these costumes. You know, if Halloween was celebrated in East Africa, where they have those pirates now, they're holding
right.
the world at bay. And you
right.
said, let's dress up in a fun costume and go out and have fun as a ritual of rebellion. They wouldn't wear a pirate costume.
It would be dangerous,
right?
No, because they are pirates. The only reason we do it is because it's the opposite of what we approve of.
We're not pirates.
We're good capitalists. You know, we supposedly work for a living and
right.
we don't steal from everybody. So a pirate would be a great way to indicate a rebellion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was wondering whether I have some people in my office, a lot of young women who've all read the Twilight series,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they're very into Bella and mm-hmm. what is it, Edward?
Yeah.
Are you seeing that as a trend?
Actually, we are, ever since the books started coming out. And it's not in costume, though, because there's their regular clothing. But
right.
the teeth, the vampire teeth, we definitely sell like crazy for that. And it not, again, not just for Halloween. There are vampire, you know, events and parties, and, you know, the bookstores do little, you know, vampire events, and we sell a ton of teeth for that. And white makeup is pretty much all mm-hmm. you would need for something like that. But yeah, that's been another thing that's pretty
big.
You know,
what's so interesting to me is that in the 50s, when I was a teenager, the vampire thing hit big, and mm-hmm. now it's back. It's about 50 years later, and I wonder what socially is going on that suddenly makes people interested in the undead, in people that suck blood. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a combination of sexuality and of death.
Yeah. Originally, I wanted the Twilight series to be part of this discussion because I wanted mm-hmm. to know, why are we there? And it's not just the series. There's a cable show called True Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something else, and there's a movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I asked this one English professor, she said, well, I think it's probably forbidden love. You know, you're mm-hmm. not supposed to go there, so that makes it very intriguing. I mean, it's dangerous. You could die, I guess, if you fall in love with a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, it's the mystery.
Blood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but, I mean, these dark characters, this is, I think, deeper than just a craze. I mean, I think it transcends time, and that people have always been, maybe it's a curiosity about death or the other side or, mm-hmm. you know, or special powers or, I don't know.
You know, mm-hmm. the witch craze in Europe and in the United States when it hit in Salem occurred during times of socio-political unrest, extreme socio-political unrest, when you could not predict the future and you weren't too sure if you engaged in XYZ, would I be successful? And the witch craze, witches in anthropology, we think that witch cultures use witch beliefs to explain the unexplainable. And if you have an economic system that you think is the best in the world, and the system is proving itself to be intrinsically corrupt, if it's allowed to function without any controls, challenges your basic economic belief. And we just went through, and politically, we have an African American who's now president. I mean, this is incredible. This is, you know, different. So I'm wondering if, I mean, the younger people are experiencing, without realizing it, the unpredictability of the world in which they live, and vampires, and being aware of the unexplainable is part of their, I don't know, way to escape it. It's course, witchcraft police are where you accuse someone of being a witch. If you go into a society, no one would ever say they were, unless you're Wicca, and we've turned that around now to be something good. But but societies that really believe in witches, they're evil. So it might have something to do with the socioeconomic times. And I was just, you know, think in 1934 is the first time trick or treat ever appeared in a newspaper in this country, and that's during the Depression. That's when it became a national trend to trick or treat. And I don't know, but there seems to be a socioeconomic correlation with some of these things that seem to pop out of nowhere.
Escape, too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, during the 30s, that's when they had the great movies about dancing and romance. You want to escape, and,
Like what about Dracula? I should have done some research on Dracula. I'm curious about
Those movies. Germany did the first one in 1922, but the Bela Lugosi thing was in the 1930s again. The underworld coming out during the Great Depression. A lot of cultures all over the world have the vampire belief. It may have come from this word that means uber, which means witch, like a Magyar word. And from uber, they get vampire. And humans are fascinated by death because you're going to die. And what do you do? Those people want something. You know, what happens to them after death? But anyway, we can talk about vampires in a little while if you want to.
Yeah.
And where that. But cultures all over the world believe in vampires and are afraid of them.
Right. So we just can't attribute this all to Celts. I mean, it runs through all cultures because it has to do with death.
Well, the Celts, I don't know if they had vampires, but they had the Halloween stuff. They had...
Right. Oh, I see. You're talking just vampires.
I was just talking about vampires. But the belief that the dead are around... Once you believe a human being has a soul, there's no limit to what you say has a soul. You know, this table could have a soul. But you can't control it. So once you have a belief in a spirit... Anything can happen. Then there's good and bad. And then, what do you deal with this? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with it? So,
interestingly, one of the articles I found was that Halloween had been banned from a school in the state of Washington because they thought it was disrespectful to witches. Because they were truly looking at that as a religion, and therefore you should have respect for it. And the parents were in an uproar. It's like, how can you ruin this for our children? And I thought it might be something more of having to do with souls and lost souls or some religious aspect, but it was really out of respect for witches. Mm-hmm. So things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. I've had a Wiccan in class, and it's an attempt to get back to what they call nature worship or respect. But... I don't want to offend any Wiccans, but if you have a belief in a good witch, it means the culture no longer believes in witches.
Because witches are inherently
evil. In a society that really believes in them. And the difficulty with witches is you could be one and not know it. And that's how you can be justified in someone killing you, and you say, I'm not a witch. But it's in you. Mm-hmm. And in societies that have witch beliefs, they explain unexplainable events by, somebody around here is a witch, and then you find out, what happened, and that caused it. Once you move into the Western cause and effect sort of notion for unfortunate events happening, you got sick because you got this disease, you got this this bug. Mm-hmm. That's why you dropped over. It wasn't because someone
put a spell on you.
But so once you have that cause and effect stuff, it gets harder for folks to believe in witches. I'm not saying that there aren't witches. I'm just saying that it's more difficult to accept the witch explanation for unfortunate events.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I just want to remind folks that we're on the radio talking about Halloween, talking about good costumes for Halloween. I'm with Starla Heim, who has outfitted people for 18 years at Dooley's Costumes. I'm with Carrie Feldman, who teaches urban anthropology and looked up and studied a little bit about the early history of Halloween for us. And Jesse Coltrane, who chases wild things around Anchorage. And we're going to talk to her in the second half of the show just about what we might expect this Halloween from the critters that live with us. So we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you. Hello. We're back on Hometown Alaska, and we're talking about Halloween and costumes and scary characters. And we were just talking about witches, and that reminded me, well, I did a little bit of research to get back in the show, to get ready for this show, that the Romans were part of this holiday, too. They conquered Ireland in the first century, and they brought with them some of their holidays, and one of them happened to be November 1st, and it was called Pomelo Day, and Pomelo is apple. And this was a goddess of fertility. And so, you know, even today, we might have games at Halloween where we bob for apples. Some of what I read showed that a young woman might peel an apple to keep the skin all together in one piece and then throw it over her shoulder and see what shape of letter it makes, and that would be the beginning of the name of her spouse. So you can sort of see how they're starting to – they called it divination. Is that the term? You're trying to figure out where your life is going, what it's going to be like. There were other examples of games that they played – putting bowls in front of people filled with different things, and depending on which bowl you picked, that would tell you something about the future of your life.
Where'd we get jack-o'-lanterns, and what are those about?
That's a good story. You know, of course, the Celts didn't have pumpkins. They had turnips and rutabagas, and they used to carve those and put a candle in them as a way to ward off the wandering dead. So they used what they had, and it wasn't really till America that we got pumpkins.
That's cool, because the pumpkin is indigenous to North America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool.
But some of what I read is that it's been a bad year for pumpkins, so we might have to revert back to the rutabagas and the turnips. I think it was Canada and maybe the Northeast U.S. have had kind of a rough year, although Vancouver is having a bumper crop, so maybe that'll cover us. Yeah. I don't know. But they predicted that you might be a little bit hard-pressed to get your pumpkin this year. Let me reintroduce my guests. I'm sorry. I've got Starla Heim from Dooley's, and I've got Carrie Feldman from UAA, an anthropologist, and Jesse Coltrane, who's a wildlife biologist working in Anchorage. Jesse, let's go to your end of the story here. I was inspired to invite you on the show because I saw the BBC special, a nature special on Anchorage that made it feel very fun to live here. I think they did a really nice job of portraying Anchorage inhabited with people, but also inhabited with lots of wildlife. And of course, that's your job to sort of, in a way, sort that out or keep bad things from happening.
Trying to keep the peace.
Yes. And one of the things that they made a fairly big deal about on the show was Halloween night, and they had great footage of all these kids, you know, wandering down dark streets, and then they juxtaposed that with footage of a moose just around the corner, you know, chomping on a pumpkin that happens to be on a fence post somewhere. So is how real is that, and what do you think about that?
It's actually very real. You know, we have a lot of moose in town, and that's normal, and we always have that many moose in town. Moose really start to move into town in mass numbers when we get 3 feet of snow or more in the mountains. So then we really start to see a major influx of moose. Usually by Halloween, we don't have that big downward movement from the moose that are up in the park more. But it is a time of year where it's dark, and we typically don't have a lot of snow on the streets, so there's not a lot of light reflection. So it's even darker than it would be if we had snow. And the moose are out there, and the moose are out there every night. And at night, the moose are used to kind of having the streets to themselves, you know, cars, but there's not a lot of activity concerning people walking up and down the street. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you have a bunch of little kids running around in costumes, and they're everywhere. And so for a moose, it's probably rather startling, not expecting it to be any other night just like we normally have. And then all of a sudden, there's all these little kids in costumes running amok. And
they're very spatial, right? So if you get too close and they're not too happy about
right.
it, what are the signals to watch for?
Well,
if
you could see it. The moose, when you invade their space or they get agitated, usually one of the first things they do is they'll put their ears back. They'll also start licking their lips, and a very agitated moose will, its hair will actually grow up on its neck, just like a dog does. Mm-hmm. And usually before it gets to that part, to that point, there's a chance that it may charge you. And the other problem at Halloween is, you know, kids are are dressed up in these elaborate costumes, a lot of times it's obscuring their vision. Even if it wasn't obscuring their vision, they have one thing on their mind, and that's, you know, run to the next house, run to the next house. And really all they're paying attention to is, I see that light at that next door, and I'm running for it because there's going to be candy. And they're not paying attention to, oh, there's a moose standing in the, you know, in the yard by that tree. And so in that sense, we really worry, because I know when I was a kid, I wasn't paying attention. I was just running from house to house and just, you know, getting as much candy as I could. And you're not expecting a moose to be standing there. And so we really, really worry, and we would like kids to make sure they, you know, pay attention.
Maybe carry a flashlight.
Yeah, flashlights are always a good thing.
Or a headlamp.
Yep, headlamp.
And also, I remember footage in that BBC special that showed them eating pumpkins, and I guess they like pumpkins.
Yeah, so while for moose, I'm sure it's rather terrifying the actual night of Halloween. After Halloween, there's all these wonderful pumpkins, and Anchorage moose are very well accustomed to identifying and eating.
They have their own Halloween rituals.
Yeah, they do, absolutely. And so that's one little bonus that they actually get from Halloween, and most moose around town actually know what a pumpkin is, and they seek it out. And
will they go after straw bales? Have you ever seen anything like that? I'm thinking about Christmas when they get the twinkly lights in there, you know, wrapped around
right.
there. But that seems sort of hazardous, and I've seen them caught in swings and things like that. But there's not too much in the way of Halloween decorations that really cause them a lot of trouble.
No, I can't really think of any Halloween. I mean, other than people putting up little pumpkin lights or something like that around their doorway, you know, but most of the time there's not really anything that I would imagine that they could get entangled in. Mm-hmm. I guess the big trend in the past several years, you see those giant blow-up
right.
ghosts and things.
Out in the front yard.
Yes, in people's yards. And I'm sure from a moose perspective, that'd be a little odd. But and moose right now are kind of at the tail end of the rut, and the bulls tend to pick a fight with large objects, but I haven't ever heard of them actually attacking any of those.
I know there was a shot in the Moose on the Loose of a moose trying to mate a mailbox.
Yes,
they get pretty randy, and anything looks good. So
it looked like a moose.
Yeah, it had four legs.
It had
right,
four legs.
Right,
about
exactly.
the same body size.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Are they away from their calves? It's the rutting season. Do some of the cows still have their calves with them?
The cows do have their calves with them.
And that's when they're really dangerous.
That
right?
is another issue. They're a little more loosely associated. They're not right at their side right now, but the bulls will run the calves off temporarily to be with the cow. But yeah, by Halloween, the rut's kind of tapering off. There's not love isn't quite in the air as it is right now.
Moose
but
love.
Yeah, but it, you know, it does. It is still you know, it is still kind of the tail end of the rut. And the one thing that we typically don't have to worry about around Halloween is bears, which is nice. Although this year, with it our balmy Hawaii-like weather,
it's really been warm.
There's a chance that there will still be some bears up around Halloween. And occasionally and periodically in years past, we'll have particular problems with bears that linger on into November with specific individuals. And so then we do have to worry in those neighborhoods where we're having problems.
Are we talking neighborhoods that border the Chugach Park? Or?
Primarily border large tracts of land, natural habitat, which are mainly Chugach State Park and Bicentennial Park as well, to a lesser degree Kincaid Park, and the Coastal Wildlife Refuge. And then, of course, the military bases are large.
Lots of wide open space
yes,
there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But typically bears aren't too much of a concern around Halloween time, and I think any self-respecting black bear would probably run from a pack of small ghosties and witches.
It would be a shame to be seen in the company of.
Yeah. The thing with moose is they don't typically run. They just stand there until you get too close, and then you have a problem.
Right,
yeah.
right. Well, I want to hear from our listeners. If you figured out what you're going to be this Halloween, give us a call and let us know. Or if you want to ask Starla for a couple of suggestions, she could probably tell you what she's hearing about. You can email us at hometownalaska@ksk.org. Thanks, Gail, for your email a little earlier today. And you can call us at 550-8433, or if you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about Alaska and its own little people. Mm. The first exposure I had was reading a story. It was in the We Alaskans of the Anchorage Daily News years ago. It was a school teacher living in the village. And I believe that she or he, I can't remember now, had heard people talking about it. So they wrote this fictional account of spotting one under a little bridge. And it was really clever and really just intriguing. And then it was a year or so ago, the Daily News had another story about Mike Dunham, I think, wrote it, who has lived in the bush, about a wildfire email that was going through the bush about these little people being spotted outside of a village. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what do you know about that?
Well, you know, various cultures have a belief in little people. You know, from our wonderful Irish and Europeans, we have the elves.
Yeah.
You know, and where I grew up in Montana, the guys I played sports against, the Crow Indians, great, great, great folks, had their little people story. And what's interesting in for me is that all of them are based on empirical evidence. Now, what is that empirical evidence? Europeans were finding, and Crow Indians were finding, and Yupik and Inupiaq people in North Alaska were finding tiny arrowheads, and what in anthropology we call microliths that you might use for hunting a very small animal. And they no longer made them out of stone, and so stories developed that they must have been little people to use these little arrows. And I don't know if that's the origin of the European story, but I do know that they were in the 1700s and 1800s when industrialization was, you know, going sweeping through Europe, and they were ripping up these old farmyards, and the prehistory of the area came rolling out, and they would find these arrowheads. And Europeans, of course, had no idea that they had a Stone Age prior to whatever their belief system was about where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they went to the elf story. So, these must have been used by elves. But I was talking to a colleague about little people who said that Yupik folks and Inupiaq did have them based on these little stories. But I don't know how widespread it is elsewhere. I have never looked into that.
And not to be confused with those little things you see in tourist shops called Billikens. That has
no, that's
that
different.
Is nothing
no,
to do with little
these are little
people.
Little people that must have lived.
Yeah. I looked up how you say it, and I'll probably mispronounce it, but Irchinghak. Irchinghak is the way, is a Yupik way of saying little people. And I don't know, I'd love to see one.
Well, it's a story. I shouldn't say that.
Let's see. Bravery is part of the tradition, at least in back with the Celts, and as these sort of traditions, you know, moved forward in time. And one of the stories I heard was or looked up and found was that there was a challenge that if you could spend the night on the porch of a church, you would hear the names of all the people who were going to die the next year. And the scary thing was that your name might be in there. You might get early notice. And, you know, so could you be brave enough to stay out there and listen to that?
It's amazing to me how we like to be, to terrify ourselves. I mean, life is scary enough.
Yeah.
My daughter was always fascinated by, she always, her and her friends get together and would play Light as a Feather. And then somebody lay down, turn the lights out, and then you'd put a little pencil or your finger under their body, and then you would say, I'm lifting you, you're light as a feather. And she got very upset with me by saying, look, do that under controlled conditions with somebody watching. She wanted to be frightened.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I go to a movie, I want to be afraid. It's just kind of interesting. I think that's part of the interest in this vampire stuff.
Right.
Because people want an emotional rush that they know is safe.
Right. Which is a little bit like going to the fair and going into that bungee mm-hmm. seat where you go up and down. Mm-hmm. And
you can return to the real world. You want that orderly world to return to. But you also want to escape it now and then as long as it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Humor is like that, by the way. I mean, in our theories, humor is an attack on some established order. You know, it's always attacking somebody's accepted something or other, and it's a way to let off steam. You can get in trouble as a comedian or as a little kid wearing something if you say this antisocial thing I'm doing is real. you know, like certain comedians are not allowed to perform because they're attacking the government or something.
Right.
So again.
Right. Well, I have to ask about Sarah Palin because I wondered if she was going to. I know that there's not really a Sarah Palin costume, but there's probably a hairdo and there's probably glasses. Now, is that big this year, or what do you think?
No, not this year. As big as it was last year, and as big as it was for the Miners and Trappers Ball we have in February. That's another big costume event. And no, it hasn't been a real big item that we get a lot of call for. I've had a couple of calls, and we buy from a manufacturer that does, you know, have the licensed masks that they make, and they did not make one of
hers.
You
need a mask for that?
Some people ask for that.
Could you have glasses? What do you sell?
Well, that's just it. Just regular glasses.
You sell a wig?
You know, and a basic wig that you would have styled in that style. There was a couple of wig manufacturers that came out with a basic style of her hairstyle. And that's all it is, though. You know, it's just a basic hairstyle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
I've got
a couple of
items. Another thing that happens during these rituals of rebellion is that you have gender changes. You have men dressing as women. Mm-hmm. Women dressing as men in order to do role reversal.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a man come as a Sarah Palin or?
Oh yeah,
really?
We get. You know, that's. I think it's kind of funny that this is the one time of year that it's okay for a man to dress up as a woman and be accepted. You know, completely.
Yes.
Okay with that.
If you indicate this is my what I really think should be done, unless you're Scottish with the kilt, you could get killed because you're violating the social order.
Right. Yeah, no, it's interesting. We definitely get a lot of calls and for men as well as women to want to be Sarah Palin. And yeah, we don't have a lot, but the basic hairstyle. And I actually send them to, you know, a pharmacy or you know, a regular drugstore.
To get glasses.
Yeah, just to get
those
basic.
kind of
reading glasses.
Reading glasses that look kind of studious and make you look a little smarter.
Right.
Yeah. I wondered, we talked a little bit about you have these amazing animal costumes that you actually don't let out on Halloween because
they're
too special. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, they're very fragile. And, you know, my animal costumes, I call them more appearance costumes. I have, you know, I have a brown bear, a black bear, a polar bear, a moose. I have some great costumes that people love to rent and, you know, show up at the airport when their family's coming in town or, you know, different appearance. You can't eat, you can't drink, you can't talk, you can't breathe hardly in them. They're that type of a costume. So it's not the kind of costume you would want to rent to go have a good time in.
Mm-hmm.
But I call those my fragile costumes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I found a website where it had all these amazing faces and it gave you directions on how to create this particular face.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys sell makeup there. Do you do makeup for people?
No, unfortunately, we just don't have the time and the manpower, you know, to stop and do that. There, you know, there's a few makeup artists in town that will come to us and ask us to recommend them, and we will, you know, based on what we know of their experience and how well they do. Of course, it needs to be sanitary. I'm not going to be, you know, recommending somebody that I don't think is going to be good for my customers.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing process to do that full on Hollywood type makeup. It takes a lot. It's a very extensive process.
Yeah,
to do something
I even saw YouTube videos of this young woman, very cute, and she was just doing using the camera right in her computer and basically walking you through making up her face. And so she started with one side already done, and then she did the other side. And I'm thinking, it's amazing what people will do. And she wasn't charging for it. She was just – it was her 15 minutes of fame, I guess, on YouTube.
But yeah,
it's funny. As old as this holiday is, it was amazing to me that there's a Twitter – you know what Twitter is. There's a hashtag for Halloween, and I started following that, which means you can just search on the pound sign in the word Halloween, and then you just see all the conversations about Halloween. And I thought, well, maybe I'll kind of – you know, test the waters here for what people are thinking of. And, you know, there were ideas. Like one woman was going to go as her Facebook page. And her idea is just to print out the page, make a poster size of it, make a sandwich board of it, and go as your own Facebook page. So that was kind of funny. But there were lots of witches and lots of goblins and just really traditional stuff, you know. And I've always thought politics was a great place. And we've had a pretty interesting state, you know, with some folks who've, been, you know, convicted and then maybe unconvicted.
Right.
So I thought we might see some Valley politicians represented, you know, people trying to imitate them, but maybe not, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure as far as what's going to be out there. We haven't had a whole lot of calls for different things like that. It's just the basics for us right now, you know, the basics, pirates and witches and goblins.
Yeah. When people come into your store, do they do they want you to outfit them? Or how does it work? Do they say, I want to be the most amazing pirate, or I don't know what I want to be, show me what you got?
Right now, it's mostly people that are, they do know what they want. They have researched online. They've researched kind of what they want. So they're pretty specific. It's towards the last, probably week to 10 days, we'll get the last minute spur of the moment. I don't know, just give me something. You know, I want something funny. I want something crazy. You know, what do you got? But right now, they pretty much know what they want. Right now, they come in with a mission, and sometimes they change their mind. I mean, we've got literally thousands of costumes to choose from. So they come in with one idea, and, you know, half the time they'll probably change their mind or at least elaborate on that idea, depending on what it is they, you know, are after.
I saw one story. It was a day or two ago. It was the Associated Press, but I found it on a blog on the New York Times. But it was basically saying that it was going to be sort of a slugfest between Bernie Madoff and Michael Jackson. Because he passed away this year, and in sort of memory of him, a lot of people would be wearing a red jacket, a sort of curly wig, the sequin glove, and a surgical mask, because he wore a surgical mask when he went out shopping. So who knows? Has anybody asked you for that?
It has been big, actually. And the interesting part about that is Michael Jackson paraphernalia has always been big in the costume industry, and all of the costume manufacturers pulled everything when he unfortunately passed away. And so what they had to do is his franchise had to re-license everything that was Michael Jackson paraphernalia.
How complicated.
It was. It was an extreme complication for any of us costumers, but we were able to acquire some of the merchandise, and we do have a few things, and yeah, we have been getting quite a bit of call for his type of stuff.
So that's working locally here. I mean, we talked about how sometimes what's nationally popular really isn't popular in Alaska. We don't always
it's
do
always
everything.
Very different.
Yeah. So that's one that seems to be translating easily here.
Yeah, that is something that is kind of sticking with the trend.
And you know, you don't see so much that people want to be national figures or Alaska figures here.
We're definitely different, and it's interesting. I'm always talking to my reps that are trying to sell me on one thing nationally, and I just tell them, like, look, we're Alaskans. We're different. It's not what you expect. Well, you might think about this. I'm like, I do. I think about that. And then I weigh out the fact that we are Alaskans. You know, we'll duct tape a costume if we have to. That's what we do. And they just don't believe me.
Blue tarp, duct tape.
Exactly.
Right. It's totally Alaskan. That's very funny. I've got to ask you guys, what have you been for Halloween? Have you, Jesse, ever been? What's your? You talked about your mom making costumes.
Yeah, my mom was really excellent at making these elaborate costumes when I was a kid, all the way up through high school. And she used to send me, you know, Raggedy Ann. I was a space person one year with this elaborate, like, purple glitter outfit. I don't know. And
you knew who you were.
Yeah, exactly. I think when I started having to make my own costumes, they became less elaborate. And one year I went as a Freudian slip because it was the easiest thing I could figure out.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that on Facebook. Yeah. All you need is a little bit of lace, a slip.
Slip and a Freud banner.
Yeah, and there you go.
Yeah. And when I was in graduate school the first time, we would have our Halloween parties would always be come as your favorite wildlife animal because we're wildlife dorks. Yeah. So I think my friend, which was the most talked about costume of the evening, was a mama possum.
Oh.
And she had a bunch of stuffed possums hanging all over.
Attached.
Yeah, attached to her.
Attached, yes. Right. I think the best one I probably ever was, but it really wasn't a costume, but it should have been. I was in ballet as a kid, and I was a penguin. Oh. And it was the most elaborate penguin costume you could ever make. It had hands and feet and a beak, and it was black and white, and the feet were yellow. And so it just looked so great, you know. So I should have saved that one, you know, and continued to wear it, because it's pretty fun. How about you, Starla? Have you ever? What do?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I'm not that big into dressing up. It's kind of interesting. You know, everybody asks me, what are you going to be for Halloween? And I always say, I'm going to be very tired, which I am. And I'm always very tired. And if given the opportunity to go someplace where I need to dress up, I'll throw something on, whether it be a lab coat and a stethoscope and, you know, make it simple and easy. But I'll give ideas all day long. I don't do a lot of dressing up myself.
You know, I wondered if you could describe some of the amazing things that you've seen. I mean, there may be some people who really do it with finesse. You know, there's those who just say, give me anything, and then there's those who've got some vision of themselves as something else.
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Any costume that you put on, it's just a costume until you put your own personality into it. So, yeah, I mean, I've seen some pretty amazing characters and amazing costumes, and I apologize, my memory isn't that great right now to think of some. But I will say that once you put anything, like a pirate can just stand there going to be a pirate. But when you get a guy that's going to, you know, basically talk like a pirate and do all the orneriness of what a pirate would do in a good way, not the kind like we were talking earlier, you know, the good type of personality you could put into a costume, to me, that's what creates a costume, rather than just putting it on and, you know, whether you want to rip the you know, style to be your own style as far as the pants and the shirt, and you create your own type of costume is, to me, what I think is fascinating.
You know, my sister in New Jersey, she's kind of serious, very bright, has three kids and, you know, mother, but she went as Charlie Chaplin, and her fun was she had the little mustache, she had the cane, she had the top hat, and she had the walk down and the everything,
yeah,
and never went out of character all night. And her friends that have known her for 20 years didn't know who it was, and that was her fun,
yeah,
was to be Charlie Chaplin for the
yeah, and to stay idea. In the character. That's just it, to be mm-hmm. the character of who you are. That's what's kind of cool.
You know, it's interesting that our word person comes from the, what is it, Roman persona, mm-hmm. and it means a mask, and it's what the mm-hmm. the Greeks they'd wear when they would pretend to be somebody else.
Hmm. Interesting.
And the Anaktuvuk Pass mask, you know, that one with the skin on it, with the hair coming out of it, they call it, you know, get an authentic Anaktuvuk mm-hmm. Pass mask,
mm-hmm.
was developed in the 1950s by a school teacher that went up there and tried to find a way for them to do something that they could make money on Halloween. They never heard
amazing.
Of it.
Hmm.
And
amazing.
That has now become an authentic Inupiaq.
Amazing. Well, we have a caller. So let's say hi to Kyle. Kyle, you want to talk about a costume?
Yes. I was a transit operator down in Seattle for many years, and we were allowed to dress up, but our eyes couldn't be obstructed in our hands. And I wanted to do something that might be a shock factor, but not be overboard.
Uh-huh.
And I found a pair of Hollywood quality ears extensions, and they made me kind of look like an elf, or some people thought it was like a Star Trek kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
pretty fun.
That's all I put on. I just put the special ears on, and they're so good, you can't even see how they meld into your own ear.
So they look real.
Yeah, and it was really fun because I got to see everybody's reactions. You know, they'd get on the bus and they'd slide their card, but they'd walk away really slow and stare at you. And
That's great.
Young kids that have more audacity, they'd move back up to the front and say things like,
"Say, Kyle,
cool ears."
Thank you for calling. We're going to run out of time here, so I want to thank our guests, Jesse Coltrane, wildlife biologist, and Carrie Feldman, a UAA anthropology professor, and Starla Heim from Dooley's Costumes. Thank you all, and thanks for listening, and I hope you all have a very safe Halloween. Bye-bye.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.